Thank you, Charles, and good morning. And it is a pleasure for me to be here today to present Walmart International. I'd like to say to many of you, welcome back to Arkansas. I say that because I hear that periodically about every other week from my wife, because as I'm traveling around the world, like I got home last Friday night after spending the week in China that Leslie mentioned last night, our summit that we had, but I also stopped in Japan on the way back and had to spend a couple of days visiting stores in Japan and arrived Friday night. And then next week, actually, with Andy Bond, I'll spend the week in the UK. Andy, I'm looking forward to visiting one of the great stores next week in all of Walmart's network worldwide. I think our Menworth store in the UK, I've never been to. Some of you have probably visited that store. I believe last year that Asda store did about $2,000 per square foot of space, and it's one I'm looking forward to visiting next week. You know, I think I have to tell you, I enjoy this meeting, as you can tell. But what I really enjoy is getting out around the world and visiting our markets and talking to our associates in the stores, but I especially also enjoy talking to customers. I've mentioned before, I think the best part of that is when I get a chance to talk to customers in their homes. I've, in almost every country that we operate in, I try to visit customers in their homes. Typically, it's a mom with children, and understand how do they relate to the Walmart brand. It's not Walmart, but it's the local store that may have another name on the building, but it's part of the Walmart network. But last week in Japan, I have one customer that, to all of you, I have to share again this story of this mom. I was in the Seiyu store outside of Tokyo, and I noticed that she had a number of great value products, our private label, in her shopping cart. So I kind of watched her, and she was, you might say, cherry picking, going from category to category, picking up great value products. So I had to talk to her. Of course, I had to use a translator, and I asked her about her fondness for great value. I said, I noticed that you purchased several of great value product, and I work for Seiyu, I said, and I'd like to understand your perspective. This customer said, I love your great value products because it helps me to save money and I do not have to give up anything on quality. This customer told me a lot about, she was willing to try brand new product. A couple of the ones that had just been introduced at Seiyu, she was willing to try it because she had already built some loyalty to the great value brand. I learn something every visit I make to a store, every country I visit, and especially talking to customers. But I also enjoy getting back to Arkansas, so I hope you also enjoy your couple of days here in Arkansas. Today, during this session, you're going to hear and you're going to come to understand that there are really four key points related to our Walmart International business. First, our strategic direction is correct and it's consistent. And we'll talk some more about our long-term strategic direction. But I know many of you are focused on the current environment in the world and just the economic situation in countries around the world. And our Walmart brands around the world, in every country we're operating in, we are well-positioned for the current environment. And we are well-positioned because of price leadership, because of this focus on being the low price and the retailer that customers need at this point in time. The third important point that you're going to hear and learn about today is about our driving focus on improving ROI in the international business. And I will give you much more specific about how we're driving return on investment improvement throughout international. And then fourth, and you're going to get to see and meet some, we have the best global leadership team among all, not just retailers, but I think global businesses today. So now let's start strategic direction. I'm just going to mention a couple of points about this again. This is what we discussed a year ago to those of you that were here, and it's very similar to what we said the year before. Our strategic direction is correct and it's consistent. That's portfolio optimization, managing a portfolio of businesses around the world. Its global leverage is part of our strategic direction. And then winning. When we talk about winning, it's winning in each and every market that we operate in. And that's where we'll spend most of our time today, is talking about specific markets and our unique plans to win in each market. That's our strategic direction. And it's, again, not a lot different than what we told you a year ago, but we continue to refine it. But as I said, and as Lee described yesterday, these are difficult times, not just in the United States, but around the world. I haven't been to a country recently in the last few months that was isolated from the world. The world today is very much interconnected. The economies are interconnected. And I do believe that in every market that we operate in, that we are well positioned. Our country leaders, our country presidents, our merchants, our store operators are laser focused on price leadership. And it's encouraging to me to talk to customers like I did in Japan that really understand that they can save money and they can live better by shopping at the Walmart store that we operate in that particular country. Now, at the same time, this underlying purpose of our company, helping customers save money and live better, it's also leading to increased sales, increased profit, and improved return on investment. So I'll give you already know our first half results for this year, but if you happen to miss it, I don't mind repeating it. It's a joy, as a matter of fact, to tell you the numbers again. If you look at our sales and profit on a constant currency basis, because I really look and evaluate performance of our country leaders on we call peg rate or constant currency, the first half of the year, this year, our sales increase in international was 13.5%, and our operating profit had an increase of 13.1%, and we had increased return on investment. I'm really pleased that we can drive price leadership around the world. We can give customers the savings that they need at this point in time, but we can also deliver value to shareholders. Now, I mentioned that return on investment improvement. Be listening throughout the next hour or so, because as you listen, you'll hear some of the specifics about return on investment improvement. And I would tell you to start with CapEx efficiency. We are building smaller stores, and we're building stores that require less capital to enter a market and to serve customers. And that's helping us. Each of the projects that we bring to our real estate approval process is having a higher IRR formula as we evaluate CapEx efficiency of our new investments. You'll also hear more about the opportunities, both now and in the future, in the emerging markets of the world, particularly the large emerging markets. About improved productivity, I like Andy and the UK team. They talk about sweating the assets. Improved productivity is really about sales per square foot, about our associate productivity. And it's really about getting more out of the assets that we already employ. Improved ROI involves e-commerce. When you look out into the future with what we see as a long-range opportunities, we do see that becomes an opportunity to grow sales and profit without the large investments in capital. Another one that's leading to improved ROI is that great value product, that private label growth, that customer in Japan, because we can give the savings. And like those products that that customer had in her shopping basket, we can actually have higher margin at the same time. And it then helps to improve ROI. And then global sourcing, both through global procurement, but also through our relationships with global suppliers. So as our presenters are talking, kind of keep an attentive ear for these particular areas, because all of these contribute to improving the return on investment in the international markets. As I said, I'm proud to be up here today. Our businesses are performing well, and I do believe that the actions we're taking now during these difficult times globally are actually going to cause us to be an even stronger, even better company as we start to come out of this global economic challenge that the world is facing. We're actually building a stronger foundation of asset management, of leadership talent, and of the way we go to market in these, we'll end up being stronger in the future as the world economies grow again. Well, that's enough of an introduction. Let's go ahead and look at a little more of the details. And on the slides, we'll go through some of these, some you've seen before. We show the world and where we are in the markets of the world. And, of course, if you filled in the United States, you'd see that on your left side of this slide, we would pretty well cover the Americas. North America, of course, we very strong business, but also a strong and fast-growing business in Brazil and Argentina, and, of course, with the solid across the left side. A very large business in the UK that you'll hear more detail about from Andy today. And then Asia is probably one story that that you'll continue to hear much more about in the future. As I said, even about the first quarter, we've been pleased with this year's first half results. But to those of you that maybe haven't been here in previous times, look back at the history of Walmart's international business, and I think you'd see consistent growth in top-line performance, and you'd see consistent growth in operating income. What that's leading to is improving return on investments. And as some of our markets have started to reach levels of maturity or levels of just having enough economy of scale, that sales and operating profit formula leads to the improving ROI. Now, I've already given you a preview of our strategic direction. I'll give you a little more detail at this time. And again, this is the exact slide that we covered a year ago. The three strategies really have not changed in terms of the overall structure of our strategic direction. I do tell you, we put even more focus this year, though, on the enablers, being customer-driven, really being obsessed with serving customers at this time. Customers need Walmart today more than ever. This is probably our strongest enabler to our performance today, is just being more customer-driven and being obsessed with serving customers. Our associates, like the associates I saw last week in China, are energized more than ever. I think they're proud to be a part of Walmart. Some of the other topics like sustainability and about helping customers save money, it's really causing our associates worldwide to be even more motivated to serve customers. And I'm really, really pleased. I tell you, the Walmart culture that you've heard about in the past, some of you would have seen Sam Walton on the stage talk about. I can guarantee you it's alive and well around the world of international today and stronger than ever. And all the things about respecting individuals, about integrity, about the foundation of the way our associates go about their jobs is something that I believe Mr. Sam would be proud of in all the markets that we operate in. These enablers help us then to deliver on this strategic direction. Now, the strategies. When we talk about portfolio optimization, it really is about driving return on investment, but it's also about balancing risk and reward. It's about having the opportunity to have positive performance in mature markets and at the same time to be exploring the emerging markets. It is about how we look at capital allocation and then how we weigh the new markets, we call it the market filters, of going to market in new places around the world, and it leads to maximizing shareholder value. There will be some shift. You might call it an adjustment in our capital allocation for the next 5 years. If you look at the past 5 years, you'd see that two-thirds of our capital went into our mature markets that we operate in. You'll see in the next 5 years more of a shift toward the emerging markets of the world. Those markets like Brazil that we're really pleased with, markets like China, our operating profit in those stores that have been open in the past in China would cause us to be even more interested in investing more and serving more customers in China. Now, the second strategy, global leverage. One, again, I'm proud of how our teams around the world are learning from each other, learning from the Walmart U.S. business and from the Sam's U.S., and then taking this to a new level. And again, these practices, I put a few here, but this is not the limiting factor on how we leverage being a part of Walmart. A few examples. It's interesting that in Brisbane, California, just outside of San Francisco, is Walmart.com. You heard Raul yesterday present about the Walmart.com business. We also have a team there that is focused solely on the international markets, leveraging the learnings from the buildup of the business in the U.S. to learn how we can take that to the markets. You'll hear some more from Andy even about Asda Direct and the dot-com and e-commerce business in the U.K., so I won't steal Andy's thunder. Global procurement, it's still a real big opportunity. It's one that we've made progress, but we have far, far to go. Jeff and the team have really raised the bar on the learning, the skills that have been brought to bear on quality assurance. We're using more third party to help us raise standards of quality in the product that we produce. And then last week, I think you'll see, over a long term, will be viewed as a milestone week for Walmart and our supplier relationships around the world in the area of responsible sourcing. Responsible sourcing is not just related to the labor in a factory, but it's related to all aspects of how product is produced for Walmart, including quality. And I think you'll hear more about that in the future, not just on the product that we direct import, but all product that Walmart purchases. And then our plan for winning in each and every market that we operate in. You might ask, and some of you said, what does winning really mean? We've tried to define it in these three ways, that to win in a market, that business, that Walmart business, must be on a path to be a significant player. In other words, we don't necessarily say you always have to be number one in the market, but you have to be on a path to be a significant player in terms of market share in the market. There must be distinct positioning for sustained leadership. This is the moat that Lee talked about as he quoted Warren Buffett. There must be something about our business that gives us distinct positioning. And then we must deliver shareholder value. That's why we're there. That's what winning is all about, and that's where we get to a unique plan to win. Every country president and the senior team in each country just over the last couple of months presented their annual review of their plan for winning that I and other members of the team evaluate. You'll hear some more of the specifics today. And each country has to have a plan to win, or as we've discussed in the past, if we're not comfortable that we have a plan to win, then we don't operate in that market. So we are well positioned, both in the mature markets and the emerging markets of the world. We are winning in the UK. I think if there's a market that I'd have to say I'm really proud of, it's this year. Being among the big four retailers, the fastest percentage growth. And if you look at the data, and Andy will share some of this with you, the team has made great progress. And like I said, I would like to now turn it over to Andy Bond, and we'll hear more specifics about the plan for winning in the UK market.
Thanks, Mike. Good morning, everyone. As Mike says, I'll talk about Asda, and there's three things that I'll talk about this morning. First of all, that we are winning in the UK. Secondly, that we have a consistent and clear strategy of how we're winning in the UK. And I guess thirdly, to instill some confidence that we're well placed to continue to win. For those of you who don't know the UK market, and I guess I should say for some of you, we met 2.5 years ago, and I guess you can judge whether what I've said now is a summary and a commitment that we have delivered what we said we'd do 2.5 years ago when we had the field trip to the UK. But a couple of slides on the UK market. It is a market that's really split into how you go to market in food versus how you go to market in GM and apparel. In food, the market is very, very consolidated. The top five players have over 60% market share. It's also a market that's heavily regulated, both from a zoning point of view and from an M&A point of view. And so in food, really strategies have got to be built around winning customers one at a time, largely within the existing stores you have. By contrast, in GM and apparel, the market is hugely fragmented and equally, quite frankly, probably compares to the US, really quite underserved from a value perspective. And this really does offer us some further opportunities in the future for expansive growth for us in the UK, and I'll talk a bit about how we're going to get after that. So I said we're winning. What's my evidence that we're winning? You see on this chart here, the green line is Asda's year-on-year sales growth as reported by an independent research company, TNS, and it's reasonably accurate, and goes up to the end of September. And the lower line is the total market, and you can see over the last 2.5, 3 years that we've outperformed the market every single month. You know, over the last 3 years, we've had the largest compound comp growth of all of the big four retailers. And more recently, our latest market share, which is public domain information because it is from TNS, says that we are the fastest growing in market share terms with a 60 basis point improvement in the last 12 weeks. Our reported numbers, in quarter one, we had comps of 5% adjusted for Easter, and in quarter two, we had 6% comps adjusted for Easter. So a very good performance. How are we doing that? We have a very simple, consistent and clear strategy based on delivering for what I would call four key metrics. First of all, we are absolutely focused on delivering for our customers. And so our simple objective is in every catchment, our store will be the best store in town. And so our customers will feel that Asda is their favourite store. From an operating model point of view, our single obsession is to deliver the lowest cost to operate business, because really to be the price leader is unsustainable unless you have a cost advantage. And from a colleague point of view, we really do want Asda to be the best place to work. And this isn't, I mean, whilst it is very good to have people engaged and motivated, this isn't just for soft reasons. This is absolutely for hard productivity reasons, and I can demonstrate the fact that great colleagues do deliver higher productivity. And finally, from a shareholder point of view, our objective, and Mike mentioned this earlier, is to both grow profitably, but have an increased focus on improving our ROI. So let me talk about each of those and explain what our strategies and our tactics are to deliver against that strategy. First of all, from a customer point of view, some evidence that we are winning for customers. On the left-hand side there, you'll see that over the last 3 years, we now have just over 1.5 million more customers visiting our stores than we did 3 years ago. Perhaps equally importantly, one of our objectives has been to broaden the interest of Asda to a broader demographic profile. And so on the right, you'll see some quantitative sense of where, in socio-demographic terms, where we've grown our customer base. And you can see our biggest growths have been in higher affluence A, B, and C1 shoppers. So we've grown customers, but equally importantly, we've broadened the interest in Asda. How have we done that? Actually, before I go into the detail of that slide, in talking to customers and understanding our strategic capabilities, we've identified 6 things that we are going to drive, have driven, are driving, and are going to continue to drive that will make Asda great from a customer perspective. 3 things that we think we can be sustainably better than anybody else on, and those are being the price leader in the market, having a broader assortment to attract everyone, not just low-income shoppers, everybody to Asda, and have colleagues that are motivated to provide friendly service. And then 3 things that we've understood from our customers have been strategic weaknesses in our business that we need to remedy. And those are our queue performance, what you call lineups, our in-stock position in stores, and the quality of our fresh food, and in particular, our produce quality. And I'll talk about each of those. First of all, as this slide says, price leadership. On the left, that's a piece of research that demonstrates, and I'm sure this is true globally, that not only is price the most important determinant of shop at the moment, but the importance of price in customers' eyes is increasing. And so you can see over the last 3 years how much price as a determinant of shop has increased in the UK. On the right, you'll see an example of our advertising at the moment, which is simple, but quite frankly, very aggressive in communicating the fact that why would you bother shopping anywhere else if you want low prices? So what this is an example of our comparative advertising. And this shows the number of items that are lower price at Asda versus our key competitors. And the real great thing about this is it's not our information. This is information from an independent price checker that irrefutably shows every week Asda is the cheapest or lowest price store in town. And finally, from a price point of view, obviously we do need to be really the lowest price rather than just communicate that we promise to be. And over the last 12 months, we've seen our price gap to our major competitors improve. And we have a price gap to our nearest competitor now of 400 basis points. So a significant and improving price gap. From a broadening of our product offer, which I said is very important that we broaden our appeal and broaden our product offer so we attract every demographic. And here's some examples of the things we've done over the last 3 years to really improve our range. So Extra Special is a premium own label range. Organics is self-evident. We are the fastest growing organics food seller in the UK. Fresh Taste is a new premium range of ready meals. And Local, at the middle of the bottom row there, is all about providing local products to our customers. All of those are the reasons why we've grown those higher demographic customers. Also, there is a very large and growing ethnic population in the UK with the expansion of the EU. And that has been another strategic objective of ours, to be the destination for people who are immigrating into the UK. And we've done a great job of satisfying their needs. And finally, produce quality. I mentioned that as one of the things that customers said we really needed to improve. Over the last 3 years, we've invested over £20 million, $40 million in purely buying better quality product. And independent research has said that we've gone from fourth out of four of the big retailers in terms of customers' belief that we have best quality produce to number two. So we've seen a significant improvement in our produce quality. Other things we've done from a merchandising point of view, our apparel range, George. Customers have said to us historically that George is the second most important reason why they shop at Asda after low prices. So getting this right is really important. And I think over the last few years, George has been slightly misfiring, targeting slightly the wrong customer. And I'm very pleased that the new team which we've put in place over last year has really got back on track on satisfying the average Asda customer, who is a youngish mum with kids who really needs fashion and basics for herself and for her children primarily. And evidence of that on the graph there, that shows our performance versus the market being the axis, so anything above that is outperformance. So you can see over the last few months, we've outperformed the market by about 8 percentage points, or 800 basis points. So a really, really good performance. Not only have we focused on that core customer, we've also enhanced our range now to satisfy the growing older population in the UK. So two new sub-brands we've launched recently in the form of Moda for ladies and Boston Crew for men, and they're doing really, really well. And I guess the last thing I'd say about clothing is a photograph there of our advertising campaign, which really is targeting our core customer, a young mum. That is a really good quality black wool coat for £15. That would be sold in most of our competitors at between £40 and £50. And we sold in the first 10 days of that advertising campaign over 200,000 units of that item, which is a fantastic performance for us. And finally, from a merchandise point of view, general merchandise, we're now much clearer and much bolder about what we're here to do in terms of general merchandise, remembering most of our stores are primarily a food store with some general merchandise. And three simple points to make. In consumable areas, it's all about delivering breakthrough prices on individual items. So great example there, we now offer the UK the lowest pay-as-you-go mobile phone tariff. At a breakthrough price never seen before in the UK. We'll enhance that everyday essential items with great seasonal events. So I'm not sure if we should be proud of this or not, but we invented Halloween for the UK as part of the Walmart family. And we have some amazingly high market share in Halloween costumes. It's now a big, big event in the UK. And that's obviously something going on right now. And there's always an interesting event going on in our stores. And finally, that's supported... using one of Mike's points about leverage, that's supported by great support in our global procurement team. Great example at the bottom there, our pots and pans range. We've recently resourced through global procurement and seen a 13% reduction in our cost of goods. Moving on then. So that's what we're doing for customers. The next strategic point is we commit to being the lowest cost to do business operator in the UK. Now, before I go through the detail of that slide, it's worthwhile emphasising this is absolutely not at the expense of world-class operational disciplines. Customers have said to us historically we need to improve the general retail standard, shopkeeping standards of our stores. So we're focused on that, and two simple points of evidence that we've improved. Our in-stock position over the last 3 years has improved 200 basis points and is now world-class in my view, and certainly we benchmark ourselves against the best in the world, and we're up there with the best. And then from a queue's point of view, it's easy to dissatisfy people at the last point in the store when they queue to pay their money. And we've actually reduced the number of people who are dissatisfied with their experience by half. We've halved the number of poor experiences in queues over the last 3 years. So moving on to the key points, our cost of doing business. As you can see there, that's independent data. You can see that we have a significant cost advantage in our marketplace. Absolutely paramount, as I say, if we're going to sustain price leadership. And a few points of evidence as to what we're doing there. As people often tell me, it's really, really simple to explain how you incur cost in a retailer. You incur cost in shipping stuff, filling shelves, serving customers, and wasting stuff. So they're the four buckets of activity we focus on to really drive out cost in our business. First of all, from a shipping point of view, over the last 3 years, we've reduced our fuel usage per case by 23%, and we already have in place activities that will reduce that by another 17% in the next 3 years. From a serving customers' point of view, the UK market is probably world-leading in the number of people, customers, who are willing to self-serve. And now 20% of all our customers walking through our store self-serve themselves, saving the company £12 million a year. Filling shelves, it was spoken about yesterday, we are industry-leading in the right categories using retail-ready packaging, which massively reduces your labour hours to fill shelves. And finally, integrating sustainability. For me, at least one description of sustainability is removing waste from your network. And a simple example of how sustainability and low cost work together, we've reduced our food packaging requirements by 25% over the last 2 years. And that saved the company £13 million, which we've immediately reinvested back in low prices for customers. Moving on to colleagues. As I said, this isn't just about satisfying colleagues. This is about creating increased productivity. We have the best productivity in the industry. For me, it's not coincidental. It's absolutely linked that we also have the highest satisfaction of any colleague base in the UK. We have the lowest labour turnover, we have the highest number of long-serving colleagues, and we have the lowest absence rate in the industry. So people really like working at Asda, but that also produces better productivity for the company. And finally, just to recap, the last one and most important probably, shareholders, profitable growth with improving ROI. Let me just talk briefly about how we're starting to focus more on driving ROI, and I've addressed this in two areas. First of all, driving profitable growth, and second, best asset utilisation. Obviously, comp sales growth is one of, if not the most important way of driving ROI, and I've talked for the last 10 minutes about how we're driving comp sales growth. Operating margin enhancement. We'll commit over the long term to growing profits slightly ahead of sales in a sustainable way. So you won't see massive increases in operating margin, but you will see them slowly increase as we grow scale and we improve our business. The third one there, virtual business growth, is really, really important and an innovative way of getting more sales and more profit out of your existing assets. So you see the picture there of a home shopping van. We now have the second biggest food home shopping business in the UK after Tesco's. That's all using our existing asset base to grow a new sales and profit stream. And we see that growing considerably further in the next few years. From a better asset utilisation, first of all, inventory efficiency. We're already pretty good at this, but we've seen a 10% improvement in our inventory management over the last couple of years. Secondly, net to gross selling space. really important in a country like the UK where land and buildings are expensive. We've focused really aggressively on making sure our stores are as small as they can be and that within that context, that the net footage, the selling footage, the overall box size is as big as it can be. And over the last couple of years, we've improved that measurement by 10%. So we're getting 10% more selling space out of the same box size, which obviously drives your ROI. And finally, space utilisation, whether this be over the overall store or down in the detail of how we run our meat department, we're doing a huge amount of work on making sure space allocation is appropriate to drive the best sales and best profit. And perhaps the best example of this, Eduardo yesterday spoke about a new merchandising system that would help drive space utilisation. That's actually being implemented right now in the UK, and we're the ones who are driving that initiative. And in one subcategory of meat, making sure the space allocation is appropriate for that subcategory, we've driven £5 million net profit improvement in just one subcategory of meat, which is obviously a great sign for the future. That's how we're driving ROI in the core business. We're also looking at new businesses which are CapEx light, require less CapEx investment, and therefore will also enhance our ROI. Mike spoke about Asda Direct. This is a catalogue-based and internet-based massive expansion of our GM business. Because our stores are small, most customers only have an opportunity to buy, let's say, 5,000-10,000 SKUs of general merchandise. This catalogue and internet service has 750,000 GM SKUs. It's in very early days now. It's only been up and running for a few weeks, but we're very excited about the future of that. And then Asda Living, where we have an opportunity to build big out-of-town non-food stores by UK standards, big, sort of 30,000 square feet. This gives us an incremental opportunity, again, in a low-capital investment way, to enter that underserved non-food market I spoke about earlier. So some other great opportunities there. So I hopefully have explained to you that we are winning in the UK. I think we have a very consistent and clear strategy as to how we're winning. And I'm very confident we're well placed for the future as well. Thank you.
So let's move on around the world. We made a very important step earlier this year in that we opened up a regional office in Hong Kong. Last year at this meeting, Vicente Trias presented. Vicente's here and is going to help with questions and answers later. But Vicente gave an outstanding presentation on Brazil. And then we decided that he deserved a promotion for that, as well as his outstanding leadership in Brazil. So Vicente was named president and the regional CEO for our Asia business. All of you know Craig Herkert. Craig is here also and will be up later with the Q&A period. Craig has been president of the Americas business. So earlier on the slide, all of Latin America and Canada that we have such a very large and strong business in, Craig has led that from a Miami office. We felt setting up a Hong Kong office to manage Asia was critically important because of the long-term opportunity that Asia provides. We operate, of course, in the three large markets, China, Japan, and India, but I think as you look on down to the future, there are other possibilities. But for the current important priority, it's how do we develop our business and serve our customers in those three markets, and that's really Vicente's charge. What we're doing is building a small but a very strong, talented leadership team that's in each regional office that's closer to the markets to support the markets, you know, in those two offices in Miami and Hong Kong. And like I said, I could not be more proud of how those regional offices are operating. Tomorrow morning, as a matter of fact, we do kind of our once-a-year October President's Roundtable. We're doing it by video conference this year of all the country presidents. Tomorrow, what we're talking about with them is new governance, where we're doing more empowerment at the local and regional level so that these regional offices really have P&L responsibility in helping us to grow our business and grow return on investment around the world, because we certainly cannot manage Asia from Bentonville. just like in the past, we really could not manage the Americas business from Bentonville, and that's the purpose of the regional offices. Now, with that, I'd like to look, as we talk about the three markets, move on to the one market that I know you'd like to hear more about, and that would be Japan. I said I dropped in on Thursday and Friday, visited stores, did not go to the office, but I visited a number of our Seiyu stores in Japan. At the end of the visit, when I got on the airplane, I had a 6:30 flight out of Narita Friday night. I told Ed Kolejewski, I mentioned this to Lee yesterday, it was absolutely the very best visit that I've ever had to Seiyu because of our associates at Seiyu and the customers that are being served. So I'd like Ed Kolejewski, the president of Walmart Japan, to tell you more details about that.
Thanks, Mike. It's really great to be with you here in Arkansas to share a little bit of information about Japan, a little bit about our country, our market, our customers. But then I think what many of you are interested in is, how is the progress going on the turnaround here in Japan? So first of all, we'll talk about the market. Japan is an incredible opportunity for Walmart stores. Japan is the second largest retail market in the world. And here we have listed the 10 largest retail markets in the world. And you'll see we're just behind the United States with a retail market of about $1.1 trillion. Now, Andy was up here a few minutes ago talking about the unique characteristics of the UK. And he pointed out that the top five retailers are about 60% market share. The story is exactly the opposite in Japan. In Japan, the top 20 retailers comprise only 22% market share. So the smallest of retailers are comprising 78% of market share. There really isn't a leader in the market with a market share of greater than 5%. So we see huge market and a huge opportunity to take a bigger piece of that pie. For those of you that have not had an opportunity to visit Japan, we are a multi-format, multi-region operator. What I mean by multi-region is we operate stores all the way from the north in Hokkaido down to the south in Kyushu, but the majority of our stores are actually located in the Tokyo area. And our stores are quite diverse in size, just like our customers are diverse. In the upper left-hand corner, you've got a picture of our store in Hamakita. It's a large facility. It has food, consumables, pharmacy, general merchandise, and apparel. Or we have a photograph of the store at Nakamurabashi, which is somewhat typical of some of our Tokyo stores, a densely populated area and located directly at a train station, where thousands and thousands of customers travel right in front of our store every day. And we do have some different banners. We've got a picture of a Sunny store down in Kyushu. And Sunny is our successful supermarket operation. When you start to think about Japan and think about serving those retail customers, I think you have to start with, how does the customer make their decisions? There are some very unique characteristics that many of you have heard about in Japan. The customer in Japan is absolutely obsessed with quality. Quality is a very distinct driver of nearly every decision that a Japanese customer makes. And right after quality is freshness. I've had the opportunity to see food operations all around the world. I don't think I've ever seen a customer that is as obsessed with freshness. So we have to make sure that our stores deliver on that. For those of you that have visited Japan, you may have noticed that it's a country with 44,000 convenience stores open 24 hours a day. Convenience is a very distinct driver in the marketplace. And today, over 300 of our stores are operating 24 hours a day. Our customer is also brand conscious. So yes, later we're going to talk about private labels, but we also are a national brand house, and we can get price leadership by showing the differences of branded product at our stores versus branded product at others. But the one that I think I want to talk about the most today is price. There have been some people who have said, well, you know, price isn't all that important in Japan. Let me tell you, our experience has shown, and we'll give you examples, that price is absolutely critical in Japan. To have a successful business, you really need to land on all of the drivers, and most importantly, you have to be able to land on price. To give you an idea a little bit of the retail landscape, we've got a chart here that has two axes. On the horizontal axis, we have price, with low-priced operators being on the right, higher-priced operators being on the left. And on the vertical axis, we have whether the retail format offers a broad assortment or a narrow assortment. So as an example, convenience stores, which are very common in Japan, their assortment is very limited, and the prices are a little bit higher than normal, and they're in the lower left quadrant. If you take a look, however, at the GMS stores, which is a common type of store in Japan, type of store that would have food in the basement, a couple of floors of apparel, and then a limited assortment of general merchandise, they have a fairly broad assortment, but from a price standpoint, they're not known as the price players. So when we look at this as the existing Japanese retail market, there is a distinct opportunity that is really quite large, and it's that upper right-hand quadrant, an opportunity to give a broad assortment, but it also an opportunity to have price leadership. So Walmart Stores plans on operating three distinct formats, and all of those formats will operate in that quadrant. The first will be what we'll call a value supermarket. This will be a store that has the best price in the neighborhood on food, and because it's a small store, it will have a limited assortment of consumables. The next format will be a food and drug store. Absolute best price on food, a full assortment of consumables, and the customer will be able to find a health and beauty options to meet all of her needs. And then the final type of operation is a supercenter. We do not have any super centers today, but by this time next year, we'll be talking about how our super centers are doing. And a super center will carry everything that you could find in a food and drug, but you will also find a great assortment of general merchandise and apparel, and all of that merchandise that'll be in that super center will be in a price leadership situation. Juan Ling Martello was up here in front of you last year and made an announcement that said, well, we're going to do a tender offer bid for all of Seiyu. We had about a 50% ownership at that time. And one of the things she said is, we're doing this to be able to accelerate the turnaround process. Well, I'm very happy to tell you that the turnaround is going quite well, and we've really been pretty busy in those last 12 months. In the last 12 months, we've completed putting 100% of Walmart systems in every one of our stores. We've gone ahead and restructured our home office. We've consolidated our buying offices, and by the time we got to December, we had a successful TOB, and Walmart stores had 95% ownership in the company. We started to expand EDLP to different food categories, and it continued to encourage us as we saw more and more success. We had a small mail order business that we decided to close. And then we kind of expanded some more EDLP in some selected general merchandise categories. We did become delisted from the Tokyo Stock Exchange in April. And by June, we became a 100% wholly owned subsidiary in Walmart stores. We've been working on our infrastructure, and we started the closing procedures of two distribution plants. And in September, we announced that there was going to be about 20 of our stores were going to close, and we also announced a voluntary early retirement program for selected associates. And then just recently, we've started the closure of three additional DCs. And we did all of that in the last 12 months while remodeling 50 of our stores. So we are on an accelerated process of turning around Seiyu. The cornerstone of this turnaround is five transformational initiatives. And I call them transformational because we're not making incremental change. We really are transforming a business. Those transformational initiatives include business simplification and productivity increases, the supply chain optimization, strategic sourcing, asset management and rationalization, and looking at the strategic positioning of our company, the pricing, and then telling that story to our customers. I'd like to give you a brief update on how these transformational initiatives are proceeding. First of all, if you're going to set out and say, well, you're going to be a price leader, you definitely are going to have to work on costs. And we are clearly attacking everyday low cost. I'm happy to announce that we've pulled 170 basis points of SG&A expense out of the business since last year. And it's not just in any one area. We are attacking SG&A expenses across the entire business. Three examples, though, I'd like to point out for you. First is our associates at store level. I'm so proud of them. We are experiencing a 10% increase in sales per labor hour. Well, if we're asking our stores to work harder, I think we have to work harder at the home office also. Through a home office restructuring, we currently are operating with 29% lower headcount in our home office than we were this same time last year. And even when it comes to systems, we've reduced our systems expenses compared to last year by 9%. We've worked on quite a few areas of the supply chain, and you know, EDLP's got some real benefits to it. One of it is reduction in inventory. We have been able to increase our in-stock levels in our stores, but we've reduced the inventory levels by 9%. And our logistics team has improved the productivity as measured by cases per hour. They've had an improvement of 9%. And as we move closer and closer to EDLP, we see savings in areas of markdowns. So far this year, we've experienced a 14% savings in markdowns. One initiative that kind of sweeps across the supply chain is a change that we've made in our meat operation. We've made a conscious decision to go ahead and go to 100% of our stores will be serviced by meat that will be processed in a centralized processing facility. We operate those facilities ourselves. This will give us a great increase in productivity, but it'll also improve our assortment and our sales. And we currently have converted 67% of all of our stores to being completely serviced by a processing center, no longer having the need to have people in the store cutting meat and having that equipment and wrapping and pricing and all of that type of infrastructure within the stores. We plan on continuing to roll that out throughout our entire chain. We've also been leveraging technology that we now are able to use from Walmart stores and have added 20% more items to auto replenishment. And we've also had the opportunity to have some assistance from our friends in Bentonville to be able to do joint business planning with the top global suppliers, but we are also now doing that joint business supplying with some terrific domestic suppliers in Japan. In the area of strategic sourcing, I'd like to just point out two categories. First is indirect imports. We have seen a 25% increase in our direct imports since last year. And some of them are really kind of creative. Andy Bond's got a fabulous food private label program in the UK. And we decided, well, let's just take one of those items. And we took Asda extra special cookies and said, let's, you know, throw a container or two on the sea, send it to Japan and see what would happen. Well, they immediately sold out. And it was such a great success, it's now become an everyday item that you can go to a Seiyu in Japan and be able to buy an Asda private label product. I think we'll see more of this. Or our friends at Sam's, who have Member's Mark here in the U.S., they've got a terrific product of shrimp that comes from Thailand. We worked with the same supplier with the same name Member's Mark on it and are shipping it directly from Thailand to Japan, and we're saving our customers a ton of money on this product, and we're going to be seeing us doing a whole lot more of that. Mike talked a little bit about the customers enjoying private label. Well, our great value business this year is up over 60% over the prior year. Another indication that customers really do appreciate price. The two items that you see photographed there, one is natto and one is cup of noodles. Those are both very big categories in Japan. Both of those items were launched fairly recently, and both of them have moved to become the number one selling item in the category in less than 6 months. So the customer is appreciating the fact that we've specking this to a very high quality, and we're offering a very distinct savings in comparison to the national brand. And then finally, on this private brand story, there'll be a lot more private brands coming out in general merchandise. Between now and the end of the year in the mainstays line alone, we will introduce 150 new items. In the area of asset management, we've been actively remodeling stores for the last couple of years, but we've only been remodeling our smallest of facilities. So only about 35% of our square footage has remodeled in the last year. We plan on becoming very aggressive in our remodel plans, and we will start remodeling our larger facilities with an intention of remodeling approximately 50% of our square footage in the next 18 months. Our remodels have been also quite successful, and we're seeing sales increases of greater than 5%. And we really do believe as we get in the larger stores, the sales increases will be even stronger than that. We took a hard look at our portfolio, and we said, you know, there are some stores that just aren't going to fit. We've actually had a couple of stores, and we're primarily a food company, and we had a few stores that we had restrictions that said we couldn't sell food. So we're going to get out of about 20 of our stores that either weren't a strategic fit or from a cash flow perspective, as you model them out into the future, they really were not very viable. Those announcements were made in September, and they should be completed within a year. All of that work on cost and productivity enhancements, all of that is designed to be able to be the enabler of price leadership. You have to have EDLC to do EDLP. And I'd like to explain this chart because it'll take a moment, but the red line that goes across at the zero area, that represents Seiyu's price compared to Seiyu's price, so it's always zero. And this is on a basket of 2,000 items in comparison to four of our primary competitors. And I'll just explain the green line. The green line starts back in January of 2005, and at that time, that competitor that is in green would have been lower in price than Seiyu by 0.8%. Through our investments in price leadership, which have been quite significant, you follow that to where we are today, that competitor is now 7.9% higher on the same basket of 2,000 items. And I know this is a very bright audience that's interested in the numbers. These investments that have been made have been funded by the improvements that we have made through productivity. So in fact, our operating performance from a profitability standpoint is actually better than it was in the prior year, even after funding all of these changes. There are going to be some people who are going to say, do you have any other indications that this EDLP thing kind of works? Well, it really does. The first category that we switched to everyday low price was baby, and we did it back in 2006, and it worked out really well. We went to pets in 2007. It worked really well. We've now have household chemicals and health and beauty are 100%. All of these categories across every store in Japan are now 100% EDLP. And our year-to-date gross profit, year-to-date comp growth in these categories is very strong. Baby's up 25%, and that's a year-on-year double-digit increase. Pets is up 23%, a year-on-year double-digit increase. And we're now starting to see the kind of growth kicking in household chemicals and health and beauty. Now, we are also investing in price across quite a few of the food categories. And I am pleased to tell you that we are driving traffic into our stores. We've got a 1.4% increase in traffic. So although our prices are coming down, we're getting a lot more people coming in and they're buying a lot more stuff. And we're very encouraged about how that is working. We also tried something pretty creative in one particular market. Now, I can't say this is representative of how the whole country will go, but in one particular market last year in July in Hamamatsu, which is in the Shizuoka prefecture, we were opening a new store. We decided to open that new store with price leadership. We decided to remodel all the stores that were in that market, and there were four stores in the market. And we put price leadership across all the food and consumable categories in all of those stores. And we decided to aggressively tell this price leadership message to our customers. Very happy to report that, as you can see, consistently across the year, we were growing at rates greater than 15% comp in the whole market. And now we've cycled that. Now we're into the year growth after that, and we are still comping in the high single digits the second year of having this activity. So we are very encouraged that as we continue to invest in price, we are going to continue to grow in the market. Well, we do have an opportunity, though, to tell that story. And that's where a lot of our activity will take place in the next 12 months. We've made the improvements to be able to afford the price. We've been able to lower prices where we're saving our customers money. But not all of our customers know about it. We're going to use various forms of media. As an example, the poster that you see there on the right, that looks pretty expensive, but that's in Japanese yen. That is a high-quality men's business suit for under $80. And you can't find a high-quality men's business suit for under $80 anywhere in Japan. So we're going to be telling about the story of these great values that we have. So I'm really pleased to be able to tell you about our business, pleased to tell you about the progress that we've made in the last 12 months. And I'm very happy to report that our strategy is on track. The transformation is going as we had hoped it would. But I think the thing that I am most pleased about is the fact that we have a management team in place that will really be able to continue to accelerate the changes. And we have over 30,000 outstanding associates in our stores that are excited about the concept of saving people money so that they can live better every day in Japan. So that's all I've got to report on Japan, and I have the pleasure of introducing our Chief Financial Officer, Senior Vice President, Juan Ling Martello.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
When we announced our tender offer for shares of Seiyu last year, we were convinced that full ownership by Walmart was the best way for both Seiyu and Walmart to deliver long-term benefits to all stakeholders. As evidenced by the update you just heard from Ed, having that increased flexibility, Ed and his team has made a lot of progress in the last 12 months. We're pleased with the momentum and the steps that the team has taken. Now let me cover China and India. We continue to have very positive results from Walmart China. In the second quarter, Walmart China's growth was in the double digit compared to less than 1%, 0.8% to be exact, reported by a multinational retailer. As you can see in this chart, the gap against competition has increased. Not only are we growing faster than the multinational players, we're also growing faster than local competition. The acquisition of Trustmart about a year and a half ago added 100 stores to our footprint. Happy to report that the acquisition is doing well. And as you can see on the second box of this slide, comp sales growth has accelerated in the past year. Together, our Walmart China and Trustmart businesses are increasing our market share in a country where retail industry is still very fragmented. The top 10 players today represent no more than 15% of the total market. Our team in China is on track to double their ROI over the next 5 years. China continues to be a very important market for us. Our plans are ambitious, and we recognize that we need to earn our license to grow. Not only are we providing the Chinese customers good value, we also take pride in providing our customers access to safe products. Much like any other market that we're in, we believe in doing well by doing good. An example would be the China Direct Farm Program. The program provides technical support and guidelines for farmers to help improve their yields and help them meet national quality standards. By giving them a guaranteed route to market, we are able to bring our customers higher quality, sustainable produce, and providing better financial returns for the farmers. Our estimate is that there will be 1 million farmers on this program by 2011. Last week at Walmart's Sustainability Summit in Beijing, we announced a 6 million renminbi commitment to the Sustainable School Project in Sichuan to help build an innovative school that will have measurably reduced greenhouse gas emissions, improved energy efficiency, and increased use of healthy building materials. We are committed to helping communities affected by the earthquake carry out reconstruction in a sustainable fashion. Lastly, in China, we continue to receive recognition for what we do in the country. We were identified as one of 2008 best employers by Manpower Resources and PKU Business Review. We scored the highest in the overall supplier satisfaction index for the fifth consecutive year in 2008. Walmart China CEO Ed Chan also was awarded the most socially responsible entrepreneur. And last but not least, Walmart China was named one of the 50 best performers in China by the Global Entrepreneur magazine. A quick update on India. August of last year, we signed a joint venture agreement with Bharti Enterprises. To date, Bharti Retail, which is a franchise operation, has opened 12 EC Day stores. The Bharti stores are doing well. I think they're averaging 30% better than comparable size stores by competitors. And that's because of two reasons. One is better merchandise, and second, you know, the Bharti stores are enjoying a 90-some percent in stock, while competition is averaging between 60 to 70%. The joint venture also plans to open the first cash and carry during the first half of next year. Moving on to the Americas, Mike mentioned earlier that under the able leadership of Craig Herkert, I will cover three countries in the Americas, starting with Canada. Our Canadian business delivers one of the highest levels of ROI throughout Walmart, and is actually higher than the overall company ROI. Walmart Canada has consistently grown sales faster than market. If you take a look at this chart, outpacing the market each quarter, with last quarter's growth coming in at 1.7 times faster. This is driven by a whole host of reasons. First of all, very healthy comps coming from our discount stores, especially in Eastern and Western Canada. Growth from adding food via our Supercenter platform, our normal square footage growth, and significant market share growth in home electronics and apparel. We are seeing double-digit comps and growth in electronics and positive comp growth for both home and apparel in a really tough consumer environment. This picture shows our 300th store in Canada, a brand new supercenter opened about 5 months ago in Heartland, Toronto, 2 miles from our Canadian home office. You see people queuing up at the store. This store generated our highest grand opening volume in all of Walmart. We are very proud of what our Canadian team has done, especially in the fresh and perishable areas, competing very successfully against some of the world's finest grocers. We have now converted over 15% of our store base to supercenters in just under 2 years, and we will close this year with 56 supercenters. We now have them in Ontario, in Alberta, and in British Columbia. Average sales lift we have experienced when we convert the stores to supercenter is about 40%. 40% with strong increases in both the number of customers as well as the average basket spend. Since our initial openings, we have made improvements to achieve higher sales per square footage and push down construction costs. We're also planning to open our first fresh food DC early next year, and this should bring efficiencies to the supply chain as well as at the store. The key takeaway here is that our Supercenter program is very much on track, aggressive growth, learning lots, and aggressively implementing improvements. Mexico. Mexico is not immune from the economic downturn that we're experiencing here in the U.S. In August, remittances from Mexican workers here in the U.S. to their families in Mexico dropped by 12% year on year. Declining oil prices clearly is not helping. Mexican consumers also have limited access to credit, and where they do have access, it's very expensive credit. And the depreciating Mexican peso is putting inflationary pressure in that country. Most of you know the toll it's taken on our top two competitors, one of which has actually filed for bankruptcy. Walmart de Mexico is very well positioned to weather this storm. Our management team, under the leadership of Eduardo Solarsino, is very disciplined, continues to be very disciplined in terms of expenses. Look at the chart. We are the lowest cost operator. We are now 150 basis points below competitors, and the gap has been widening. Because of our low cost advantage, we are well positioned for price leadership. For instance, in our Supercenter format in Mexico, it is achieving its price gap differential across every single region. And if I'm not mistaken, in the most recent survey, Craig, we are running at about 800 basis points better than competition, which is very significant. Walmart de Mexico's ability to test, learn, and roll out different formats has also given them the flexibility to serve the needs of diverse customer segments. Among the highest return and fastest growing formats is the bodega format, which includes the Bodega Aurrera, 50,000 square feet, Mi Bodega, which is about 12,000 to 13,000 square feet. And we have just added a new format, which is Bodega Aurrera Express. It's a bodega prototype of approximately 5,000 square feet with about 2,000 SKUs. This format combines the concept of a discount store with that of a convenience store to meet daily basic needs for groceries, fresh, and consumables. It also allows us to take bodega prices to smaller size markets where a bigger box just was not possible. Lee yesterday talked about widening the moat. Walmart de Mexico is in a great position to continue growing and increasing its market share. With its multi-format strategy, a population of about 106 million people, and that is quite young, opportunities to grow in all the regions of the country, combining growth in cities where we already have a presence, as well as adding new cities. We currently are in about 196 cities, from a total of about 370 potential viable markets, and clearly gaining share from the informal market, estimated to be about 50%. With a healthy balance sheet and great cash flow, being the lowest cost operator, Walmart de Mexico is poised to win and will come out of this challenging time an even better retailer. Positive momentum continues in Brazil. Some of you took a trip to the city of Salvador in Brazil, April of this year. We certainly appreciate your very positive feedback. Brazil is a good example of our strategy of portfolio optimization. In the last few years, we achieved scale with a combination of organic growth as well as acquisitions. Walmart Brazil is now present in 18 states, plus the Federal District, which make up the three most important economic regions of the country. Number of stores now total over 300. Sales of about 15 billion reais, which is in today's exchange rate, is about 7 billion USD, and more than 72,000 associates strong. As a result of our consistent practices in price leadership, providing customers with great shopping experience, very effective leverage of global procurement, and good associate engagement, we continue to increase our market share, increase our operating income, and improve ROI. In this meeting last year, we said that our Brazilian business should double ROI in 5 years. I'm pleased to share with you that the team under Hector Nunez's leadership is very much on track to deliver that commitment. Transitioning from informal market to formal market, serving the underserved, is an opportunity that exists not just in Brazil, but all throughout Latin America. There are about 300 million low-income consumers in Latin America. Many of these consumers are underserved. In fact, just like Mexico, roughly 50% of the market across the region today is informal. A key component of our strategy to win is to serve this customer segment. In Brazil, for instance, we have two formats, Maxi and Todo Dia, which targets a lower income customer. Maxi is a cash and carry format that was actually developed by Sonae, one of our Brazilian acquisitions. Todo Dia, on the other hand, is a soft discount format lifted from our learnings, from our experience with Pali in Central America and Mi Bodega in Mexico. Back to Mike's point earlier about global leverage. Serving the underserved is a great opportunity for our company. Our Save Money, Live Better proposition will resonate very well with this customer segment. Now, aside from Todo Dia in Brazil and Mi Bodega in Mexico, we have Pali in Costa Rica and Nicaragua, and they are stores with 2,200 to 4,000 square feet. Dispensa Familiar in El Salvador and Honduras, and Changomas in Argentina. Common profile across all these formats would be price leadership, food safety, and convenience. This wraps up our discussion on how our different markets are winning or have a plan to win to significantly improve ROI. At this point, I will turn it over to Mike.
Thanks, Wanling. You know, the underserved customer that Wanling just mentioned, I visited those families in India, in Central America, and other countries. And I'll tell you, that's when I really get a very personal passion for our business. But also, even when I see customers in Japan that really need Walmart at this point in time, and when what we can bring with price leadership, with everyday low price through everyday low cost, gives me new passion and new energy about my particular job. And I think that permeates through our country leadership and all the way to our associates that work in the stores. So it is the underserved customer, but in today's world, it's really all of our customers, regardless of the income levels because of the situation in the world. I'd like to give you an update on CapEx. When you look at all of this rolled together, what's our plan look like for next year? Start with new stores, as we'll be in the total, the actual CapEx investment next year will be in approximately the same range that we've had last year and this year's projected range. And as I said, that's still with increased square footage because we are building more efficient, but also in many cases we're building smaller stores, but less capital invested per store. Then you'll see remodels listed, and similar to Eduardo in the U.S. in terms of remodel cycles. This year, we really put even more focus on ensuring that we keep our stores up to standard. A retailer just cannot allow existing assets to deteriorate. We continue to invest in remodels. And then, of course, like a new distribution center in Canada, we'll be opening to make our business even more efficient, more productive, in the logistics area and other support area. So you'll see the range of capital is not a significant difference, 4.8 to 5.2 billion this next year, but with increased square footage. I might add we don't report the number of units we open because, frankly, we're opening many more of the small units, and that's why I give you the square footage, which probably gives you a better feel of our expansion plan. Now, out of this last hour or so, you know, you've heard a lot of discussions, some specific to markets like the UK and Japan that we went into more detail, some broad and some quick. I wish we could spend more time on all the markets. But across the world, you can see these four common elements that you would have come to understand this morning. The strategic direction, it's correct and consistent. Portfolio management, global leverage, and winning in every market is our strategic direction. We are well positioned. This is a challenging world that we're all operating in, but we're in the very best position to serve customers today. We will actually come out of this much stronger. all of the steps we're taking to run a better business will cause us in the long run to be stronger. When other competitors and other markets may struggle, we'll end up growing and we'll end up serving customers to be here long term. I might add, you know, we run international as a long-term business, but yet we do focus on our profitability and our return on investment quarter after quarter, but we also make decisions that are best long-term. We are very focused on driving return on investment improvement. You can hear it from country leadership, but of course, all of our steps we take, we look at what's the impact on return on investment for our shareholders. And then you saw just a few today, the best global leadership. When you get to visit markets like some of you've done in Brazil or in other markets that we've had analyst meetings, I think you get a better feel that we do have the very best talent running our businesses in every country, our country presidents and senior leadership, but also the regional office leadership and the home office leadership that supports our countries. This would be really the four key takeaways that I'd hope you'd come out of today's meeting. I would now ask that we could turn the lights up. The leaders have presented, but also if Vicente Trias and Craig Herkert would come join us, and Charles will move to the Q&A period.